All right. Our next presentation, new trends in high volume manufacturing, test of MIPI-based devices. Mohammed Hafed, PhD, Chief Executive Officer of Introspect Technology. Introspect Technology is a leading manufacturer of innovative test and measurement products for high-speed digital applications. Mohammed is a passionate technology speaker and thought leader in his field. He contributes to MIPI working groups and actively participates in promoting the MIPI technologies worldwide. Please welcome Mohammed Hafed.
Thank you very much, Roy, for the kind introduction, and thank you everyone for sticking around for this very last presentation of the day. The fact that it's actually the last presentation is very fitting for the topic that we're covering today, because I'll be talking about the very last step that every manufacturer of any product has to go through before they ship their product. And so every chip manufacturer, every module maker, every system OEM has to do a final test after they produce the product, and this is the topic for today. Of course, because this is a MIPI conference, the topic will be about MIPI interfaces in particular. So I'll describe overview of some of the methodologies that we have seen in mass production of MIPI interfaces, and then I'll highlight the specific requirements that MIPI specifically results in when it comes to production testing. And these are divided into two parts. One is hardware requirements. As you know, MIPI has low power, high speed signaling, has multi-level signaling, and these all have big implications on how we mass produce and final test these devices. Then we'll talk about protocol requirements. You heard about all the protocols this conference today. They're very complicated, they're packet-based, there's bidirectional communication, and these are all effects that need to be addressed in production during final test. And then finally, we'll describe what I call system-oriented testing, or the desire to test the product on ATE in as close a manner as possible to how it'll be used in its final application, whether it's a phone or a car. So we'll talk about that and then some case studies as well. So the devices that are typically integrating MIPI now are becoming more diverse. You don't just have smartphone devices, let's say like image sensors or DDIC on the bottom left-hand corner here. You have multi-controllers that need to have multiple camera links and display links. You have ISPs, which are becoming a very big part of the industry. These will have CSI, DSI, sometimes CSI in, CSI out, and DSI in, DSI out. And of course, bridge devices. And whatever the device class is, at the end of the day, these are high-speed MIPI protocols that need to be tested. And the key word that we're talking about here today is high speed. The desire to test your MIPI at 2.5 gigabit per second, 4.5 gigabit per second, 4.5 gigasymbol per second, for example. This is really what we are trying to talk about here. And the choice that you as a developer have when it comes to defining the final production test for your device is kind of summarized in this slide. On the left side is the classic ATE instrument. You buy a big ATE from the ATE vendors. The problem is that the ATE vendors are not able to keep up with the speed required, even for MIPI interfaces. And so if you try to configure an ATE system for multi-gigabit per second data rates, probably this is very expensive and probably it has some limitations that we'll describe later. And then on the far right side is the golden device methodology. You have your device under test that's, let's say, a transmitter, a DSI out. You try to purchase a DSI in device and you try to put it on the load board and come up with a final test. This is, of course, a very point solution. It's very limited to what the golden device is and generally does not achieve what we call instrument grade, does not necessarily have the quality required for testing. And so what we'll describe today is a hybrid solution that's in the middle, and that's the concept of putting an ATE channel card on a load board. So it takes the best of the ATE world in creating a high-performance instrument, but it brings it on the load board at a low cost, just like a golden device. And it's possible to do so and create essentially a pin electronic on a load board. But it also offers an opportunity to add more than PIN electronics, and we'll describe that through the rest of this presentation. By that I mean the fact that within each of these PIN electronics now, you're able to integrate features that are required for MIPI. You're able to put a protocol fabric, for example, that really handles the protocol and can send packet data to the device under test. And then, most importantly, you're able to put an integrated multi-level PHY that's expected from MIPI. LP, HS, even within HS, if you're C-PHY, you are able to get multi-level signaling for C-PHY. It's not coming yet. Okay. So the ability to put a load board channel card gives you the opportunity to also put a more complex, more complete solution for MIPI. And so now we'll get into the requirements for MIPI. Why are we even talking about this? Why do we need to put a channel card on the load board? And like I said, they're divided into two parts, hardware and protocol. So for hardware, the most obvious thing is the low power and high speed signaling. Even in MPHY, so C-PHY, D-PHY, MPHY, they're all characterized by low power signaling where the impedance is high or higher than normal, and then high speed signal where the voltage levels are extremely low but the impedance is low. So a conventional ATE is either low impedance or high impedance. It's either low voltage or high voltage. It's not really both. And I put in some numbers here to emphasize the challenge that MIPI offers to the industry. Your high-speed signal often runs at 200 times faster than your low-speed signal. And as the high-speed protocols keep increasing, that difference increases even more. Similarly, the voltage levels, LP signaling is 1.2 volt LVCMOS, maybe 0.9 volt LVCMOS. Your high-speed signaling that you're expected to test at for a receiver, for example, is down to 40 millivolts. And so that's the challenge that is very hard to achieve with conventional ATE at high speed. The other big challenge is switches on ATE. So we've seen this many times. We've done it ourselves even, where somebody would say, okay, I'll buy a Verigy 93K, put a PINSCALE 3 gig channel card on it, and I'll put switches on the load board. What happens is you often end up with waveforms that are shown on the right-hand side here. So oftentimes you purchase microwave switches that are designed for low impedance switching. They're not designed for dynamic termination. And so you put them on a high impedance load and you get waveforms that look like this. You also have the switching that happens inside the device itself to go from high impedance to low impedance. And these all create very real artifacts on the signal under test. So when test engineers start, to develop test, switch solutions like this on ATE, they face problems like this, and the default situation that they go to is to reduce test coverage. They'll say, I will test only in high speed, or I'll test only in low power. And that gets the product out the door, but it reduces test coverage. And that's really what we're trying to solve here. The multi-level signaling, like I mentioned LP and HS, but with the invention of C-PHY, and soon we're going to see A-PHY with the PAM signaling, more and more, these devices have multi-levels on them. C-PHY has three levels in HS mode. And if you go to any ATE company right now and say, I want to do C-PHY, they'll tell you, buy double the number of channels in the tester, tie them together on the load board, and spend hours and hours and hours calibrating their timings to make sure that they can meet the trio requirements for C-PHY. What we're trying to do here is maybe offer another idea. And then we can get into other requirements that are the result of the 2.0 and the 3.0 standards, like equalization and pre-emphasis and so on. And these are all just very difficult problems to solve on conventional ATE. The one that I want to mention a bit here in terms of hardware, because it's going to come up in protocol as well, is the bidirectional bus control. And so DDICs are the best example for this, where the design is best suited for checking results by doing a bus turnaround on the DDIC. And in and of itself, bus turnaround is not a big deal. You have the tester driving at some point, then it gives the bus over, the device starts to drive to give you the response, and then the tester starts to drive again. But on ATE, when you have a channel card and then almost a meter or more worth of cables to go to the load board, and then the load board and the device socket. You have to worry about the turnaround, and you have to worry about being able to drive that LP signal. Now we go on to the protocol requirements for MIPI testing. And as we all know, MIPI is a packet-based protocol. And more when we talk to designers that are starting to define the test plan for their devices, they want to send packet protocols. They don't want to do a PRBS pattern or a simple pattern. They want to make sure that on the tester, the device operates in as close a manner as it would be in a final application. So for DDIC, they want to send, let's say, a compression PPS table and see if the device will receive it. They want to actually send command patterns to the device and see it will receive it. And if anyone who's programmed an ATE here, ATE is a vector-based system. It's kind of a byte blaster. It only knows timing cycles and bits. And so as a test engineer, in order to create a packet structure like this, you have to spend a long time compiling vectors that look like a packet. And these are often very static, and they would take hours just to compile and then run on a device under test. The an extension of this and something that's more important is the requirement or the desire to configure a device for testing through the protocol. So we saw this in PCI Express before, we saw it in other standards, and in MIPI, it's the same thing. I mentioned the PPS table for compression. If you're doing a DDIC and you want to actually test it, these chips often, or the designers of these chips often, do not want to put built-in self-test features in the silicon because it takes area and it makes it more expensive. They would rather have the tester drive the protocol, interrogate the device, and the device has the ability, of course, to respond and say whether it saw CRC errors or not. And so the example of compression, a tester would be required to send the PPS table to the device, then send a compressed stream and see if the device has accepted that or not. Sounds very simple when you're working in the lab in a bench environment or even in a design kind of environment. But again, the challenge that we have with ATE is that they have not been designed this way. They've been designed for 70-style simulation-based vectors, and that's, you know, that's the big problem. Which brings me to the next slide here, on the general topic of functional testing. Everybody wants to do functional testing on ATE. And if you have ever programmed a tester, then you are very familiar with the graph on the right. This is a simulation-based vector, which means you define every pin on the bus that you want to test, and you literally draw the timing diagram for the device one cycle after the other, and you define what the bit for that cycle is. It's a very tedious process, very, very time-consuming. And what it means for test engineers and the companies that employ them is that when they are faced with the daunting challenge of trying to create a protocol on a vector, they reduce their requirement. They say, I'm going to test less. And we see it many times where at the end of the day, the test is almost a no test at all. It's almost a continuity test. Does it go high? Does it go low? And they ship. And that can translate into quality issues with customers. And so a trend that has happened in other areas and that we're seeing in MIPI now is the ability to do protocol-aware or protocol-based testing on the ATE. So on the left are commands that every one of us here in the room understands. They're DDIC commands, short write, short read. If it's camera, it's CCC commands or camera control commands. These are all understandable things for designers and understandable things for the test engineers as well. So all of my conversation so far has been about this notion of functional test, system-oriented test, and I just want to elaborate some more on this with real examples of how we have seen it with some of the users that we work with and how they're able to achieve, let's say, 2.5 gigabit per second DeFi testing on an ATE, 4.5 gigabit per second DeFi testing on ATE, and even higher speeds. And it's all based on creating these load board channel cards or load board pin electronics. So this is a microcontroller test example, microcontroller that has a CSI input in it. So it's a very familiar paradigm. The CSI input is driven somewhere on the device under test with this orange arrow. And the question is where it's coming from and what stimulus do you provide to the device. And so these three categories of arrows are shown here. One is the blue, one is the orange, and one is the yellow. And each one of them is designed to be friendly to the source that's driving it. So if you have an ATE here that's rated for 40 megahertz, which means that it can only produce a bit rate of 40 megabit per second on its vectors, you still want to test a 2.5 gigabit per second CSI2 input module. And so what this kind of paradigm would do is it would use the 40 megahertz to create very slow commands to the load board tester. These commands could be things like program the HS voltage for testing the receiver or program the LP voltage for testing the receiver. But none of these vectors know anything about CSI2. All they know is register write to set voltage, register write to start pattern, register write to stop pattern. And then the CSI IP or the CSI knowledge is all inside the load board module. That could be pre-stored in flash memory. It could be pre-stored offline. And on the tester, the test engineer, the operator, does not have to know anything about this. They just know that when they say start, the CSI stream will go to the device under test. And that finally brings us to the yellow, which is the error checking. As we all know, MIPI is unidirectional. And if you don't have any other links on the microcontroller under test, then you will be using some kind of JTAG or even I2C to check the CRC error on the device. And so this is a typical ATE-based solution for mass production on a microcontroller that's running at 2.5 gig or higher. In terms of timing diagrams, like I said, the ATE vector, the blue vector that we showed earlier, is sending very low-speed commands, 1 megahertz commands, commands that are friendly to the ATE. And they only use what is known as a single timing cycle. If you've known ATE, that means programming the vectors for a single timing cycle is a lot easier than programming it for many timing cycles. And then when the configuration for the test module is finished, a simple command to say start transmission is issued, and then the test module sends a complete CSI2 protocol over DeFi or over CFI or whatever the physical layer is. And you'll see here the time scales. This is high speed at multi-gigabit per second, and this is low speed at 1 megahertz or 1 megabit per second. We've seen cases where testers that were designed for, from the 1970s for 40 megahertz, let's say, be used to test 4 gig, 5 gig interfaces this way. The next example is the DDIC testing with device response checking. And so again, we've mentioned the bus turnaround in the previous section of the presentation, where we said that the device, likes to respond just through BTA. Designers want that. And so whether you're using whatever instrument that you're using, if you're able to actually send the video data to the device under test, and then dynamically, while the video is playing or even stop it, send a BTA request to say, tell me if you've seen everything is passed, or you get an error report from the BTA request, and that could be your test. It sounds simple, but what's most important is that you've stressed the device with its complete payload. If you're sending 1080p video, you're sending 1080p video on the ATE, and then you're getting error report from the device under test, and that's your pass-fail testing condition. And then finally, we're showing an example here of image sensor test. One of the big advantages of image sensor ATE, the ATEs that are designed for image sensor testing, is that they offer a lot of ISP and a lot of image processing capability. And that's something that has a lot of value, because at the end of the day, if you're an image sensor maker, you want to test the sensor array and you don't care about the protocol. And this is the spirit of what we're trying to show here, where you want to leverage maybe the ISP software that's already in your tester. It's designed for LVDS signaling, or even it's designed for DeFi signaling at 800 megabit per second, and you want to do CFI image sensor test at 2.5 or 3.5 gigasymbol per second, then a solution like this could be useful, where you put a fast capture module on the load board or on the probe card. That module is responsible for understanding the CFI or DeFi protocol, capturing all the image data in its onboard memory, and then almost acting as a bridge device, slowing the signal down, taking that image array and sending it over LVDS or over DeFi at a lower speed, or even over other, you know, standards that are able to be understood by the ATE. And if you configure the transfer from the module to the ATE to be what you've developed previously in your test programs, then that makes your time to market fast. Or you can just, you know, invent your own ISP system as well. We've seen cases where people say, we don't want to use ATE anymore because we do not need to use ATE anymore. We'll use the same handling and illumination infrastructure that we've done before with our probe cards. We'll add capture tools that we design or we acquire, whatever the case may be, and then we'll attach them to PCs or modular computers that are able to do the ISP. And so that's basically the, you know, the end of this presentation. I thought, as the last presentation of the day, we wanted to make it short and sweet. And it's also a lesson that in final test, you want to be as fast as possible, because the test, the time you take to test is the time that's not being spent shipping the product and creating revenue. So this presentation covered the topic of at-speed testing. We're really focused on multi-gigabit per second testing of MIPI interfaces, whether they're sensors or logic devices. And we've hopefully delivered some of our insights from working in the industry on the desire to do functional testing, the desire to do system-oriented testing, even on logic devices. It's not good enough to just do a built-in test. There is a real desire to actually pass at-speed payload to devices under test. We described how that can be hard because of the MIPI hardware requirements that are LP and HS, and also because of the protocol requirements and the inability of conventional ATE to cover them. And then we've described some methodologies that we've seen, certainly, that have created really different economics for the cost of test for many of the users that we've worked with over the years. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody have any questions for Mohammed? Everybody's packing up and ready to go. All right, Mohammed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ron.
It was a great presentation.
Thanks.
Watch your step.
Yes, yeah.
All right. This concludes our presentations for MIPI DevCon 2019 Taipei. I'd like to thank everybody who's sat through the presentations and listened to the presentations. We hope that we were able to bring a lot of information to you about MIPI and the specifications that we're working on and how they can affect you and improve your designs going forward. At this point, I would like to say thank you to everybody who has made this developers conference possible. And at that point, or at this point, the MIPI DevCon is closed. Thank you.